Good morning, Chief Justice and Justices.
Keith.
Yes?
Mr. Saleen, I've now been twice advised to allow the marshal to change the disc for the recording, so... Okay, we'll be ready too. All right. 04-10 in the matter of the petition for amendment to Supreme Court rules relating to district committees and the lawyer regulation system. The presenter is Keith Saleen, Director, Office of Lawyer Regulation. Mr. Saleen.
Thank you, Chief Justice, and good morning to you and the other justices. The court will recall that when it created the lawyer regulation system in September of 2000, in its order, it asked the Board of Administrative Oversight to study district committees, consider their retention, and if so, recommend improvements in the functioning and operation. The board conducted a three-year study. It was very extensive in the context that it made and the work that it did, and gave a report for the court in March of 2004. In studying that report, the board and our office considered how we would implement those recommendations. We agree that they all should be implemented. Some of them are recommendations that confirm current practices. Many of them are. There are some that can be implemented without the court's action by just changing our office policy, and we have. And then there are some that require rule changes, and that is the genesis of the petition that's before you today. As an enclosure to the petition, I included the board's report, which contains its rationale for the changes that are recommended in the petition. I have had the opportunity to review a draft of a potential order that the court may consider that the commissioner provided me, and I found that to be acceptable to our office. I have also looked at the State Bar of Wisconsin's submission to you and some of the concerns that were raised there. I understand the concerns. I don't think that they should pose problems for our system because we believe, and the court's precedent, I believe, confirms that the due process concerns are satisfied once the complaint is filed and those procedures are in place. We do have policies that require committees to have a quorum for them to meet, which is a majority of the committee as a whole. And I believe that that is a satisfactory policy to assure the court that the committee is giving its typical, thorough, and effective consideration of all the concerns. And with that, I would be happy to respond to your questions as best I can.
Mr. Saleen, the proposal to change 2106, and I'm not concerned about the public member change, but the change from to the extent feasible, one-third of the members shall be non-lawyers slash public members, to at least one-third, and to the extent feasible, two-fifths. I think that may have been one of the concerns of the bar, that might present some difficulties if you can't get at least one-third. Do you foresee any difficulties there, and what was the reason for that change?
Justice, the reason for the change was a sense that an increased involvement from public members would add to the public perceptions of the integrity of the process, and I support that. The recruiting efforts to get public members, I think, is more difficult than getting attorney members, yes, and I do foresee that there will be some challenges there, but I think that we can meet them. Presently, I don't think we have any problem meeting the one-third requirement. And from time to time, there may be an exception to that, but we seem to have enough public members. Members of the committees, other members of when I go out, we seek public member involvement and try and solicit nominations for the Appointment Selection Committee. That appears to be working.
Do you object to adding, again, I'm looking at the State Bar of Wisconsin, April 12th submission, and their concern, objection would be too strong, but their concern is that for that the respondent, that is the lawyer against whom grievance has been filed and investigated, should not be able to challenge the district committee if the makeup of the committee doesn't quite fit the one-third or two-fifths. And so what they want, as I understand it, is sentence or two that says no defense if the committee is not composed of this number. And they have a similar concern, if I understand their proposal, and both Attorney Wood and Attorney Benke are scheduled to appear. They have a similar concern that your requirement of a year training, if there isn't that training, that someone's going to challenge the whole makeup of the committee, the whole investigation, the whole referee, because there was an initial problem, and would like some language, I assume, maybe they can even suggest language, that would say these, quote, non-compliance are not, for lack of a better word at the moment, subject matter jurisdiction, personal jurisdiction, competency, or any other thing.
Chief Justice, an inside joke. Okay. I agree that that kind of language might make it more clear and be helpful. I have no objection to that language. My initial thoughts on it were that it should be unnecessary, but it is certainly not harmful and could be very helpful.
Maybe I'm going to come at it from the other direction.
Okay.
Don't you want these individuals, the members, trained before they start sitting and making decisions? Doesn't it make sense to kind of have them trained?
I don't think that it's an absolute requirement that they receive the training before they serve. And for several reasons. First, we do four sessions of initial training between January and May. And because the appointments come out in January, it really starts at the end of February through May. And we have gotten a very good response in attendance to that. Second, we also go annually, either I or a deputy from my office, to give substantive ethics training to every committee every year. So they're going to see us within a year on that basis. The way the committees function, Justice, they don't assign investigations right away to these new members and just leave them out cold, not knowing what to do. I mean, there are experienced members on the committee. Some of them, they're able to serve up to 9 years. And frequently, we do the investigations by signing two or three people as a team, and including public members in those teams, to actually do the investigation. And then the results are presented to the committee. So we don't throw new investigators to the wolves. But even so, if they're untrained, it is still helpful for them to participate in the meetings. For the lawyer members, I mean, they understand ethics rules and they know what the process. For public members, they still bring that fresh perspective to things. And the idea of asking questions from that fresh look, I think, is even helpful at that point. And I don't see any problems with the quality of the work they do.
With regard to the 90-day time limit for completion of the work, I know that the proposed change starts the 90 days running at a different time than it previously commenced, and I think that's a good idea. My concern is, with regard to, is 90 days realistic? We met, the court met last week or the week before with the Board of Administrative Oversight and Preliminary Review Board, and at that time I think the average completion time for the materials that we saw was about 159 days. I also, in preparation for that meeting, reviewed minutes of the different boards, and with regard to the discussion of how district committees were performing and if they were getting enough cases referred to them, you had commented that you expect the referrals to be significantly lower, but that the cases referred will be more difficult and complex.
Right.
Now, I hope you're wrong, at least in one regard, because, of course, I personally, and I know the Board of Administrative Oversight in their report, encourage more referrals. Mm-hmm. But let's say you're right, at least with regard to the referrals are going to be more difficult and complex. How is 90 days realistic if the current completion average is 159 days and you anticipate the cases referred to be more difficult and complex?
That is an excellent question. It may not be realistic. I think the commitment that we are making to this is to make the best possible effort to make it happen. And I think that there are several things that relate to this, but I think it's important to do several things well that are going to require time and effort that I think the board's recommendations help us to do. And honestly, our office has been committed to long before these recommendations were written. But in terms of recruiting the right kind of people to do this work, we're talking about 16 geographically diverse, distant, volunteer committees. No one takes their most important work and sends it outside of their control to people over whom they cannot control and then requires it back as a means of doing it as correctly, promptly as possible. They don't do that. There has to be some other value to the committees, and there is other value to the committees. What we are doing in this process is taking advantage of what they do well, their deliberative power, and the diversity of their expertise. If you had cases that need that, they should go, and there are lots of them. But there are not as many as there used to be for several reasons, because we used to send cases for other reasons to committees, which by the court's directives we don't do anymore, or by the policies that the court has prescribed. So you have to have people who are ready, who are willing and able to do that to the high standards that we all want to achieve and require. And so that can be difficult, because the kind of people that we want to recruit who are going to do this are extremely busy, they have other lives, they have to have another means of making their income. And so that can be a challenge. And we don't always find the quality of people that we would like to find, but we continue to improve that. Second, there has to be a significant investment in the training of the committees. And for me to say that I go visit every committee once a year, when you compare that with the discipline, the regularity, and the contact that I have with a staff member, there's no way you could ever achieve that. You would never see me, and I would die out on the road somewhere, I guess. It's impossible to expect that. But the investment is worthwhile because of the attributes that they bring. But they are never going to look at the normal case, a consistent application of the rules, and the normal processes in terms of the notices that we do and the final analysis that we do and the presentations that we have to do. They're never going to be as good as someone in my office who works very closely with supervision, who handles 50 or 60 of these every year, compared to an investigator who will handle probably 6 during a 9-year term on average or less. It just isn't going to happen that way. There has to be an increased... there has to be better supervision of the work. And a lot of these recommendations relate to that. And so we're talking about master schedules. We're talking about more contacts. We're talking about more visits. And I think these are worthwhile, and I'm committed to doing them. And I think it will improve that. And then the supervision and the review, the feedback, I think also has to improve, and I think it is. We're seeing that because of the training we do and the manual that we submit, we're seeing an increase in the quality of what we get back and the standardization of it, which is important to how the case proceeds after. And I think the preliminary review committee at the meeting last week confirmed that they're starting to see a trend in the right direction there. But all those things are important to make it work well. The concern about referring more and is one that I think everyone seems to share, but the concern about getting our investigations done in a timely manner within a year is also one that everyone seems to share. And what does not seem to be real clear is that that's contradictory advice. Those things work against each other because the advantage of the committee is their diversity of expertise and their deliberative power. And the disadvantage is the time that it takes to do that. And so we have to find a way for our office and the committees to work together well so that we take advantage of the relative strengths, we avoid the relative weaknesses, and we accomplish all of our tasks in a timely and competent manner. And so we have to be careful about the criteria that we use in making these kinds of referrals, and we have to be careful that we run the entire system in a way that is most correct, most prompt, and most economical.
It seems a bit at odds. That is, there's something in counterintuitive in the response. I'm not saying incorrect, I'm just saying counterintuitive.
Yes, right.
I would imagine that if you would make greater use of the district committees, refer more out, that would free people in your office up to concentrate on the remaining pool that is not. So in other words, it makes sense to me. It seems logical. If you give someone else work to do, you have to do a little bit less. I note that the Board of Administrative Oversight Committee has indicated that they want more cases referred. Maybe
Justice,
they're wrong. You know.
It is counterintuitive. I have, when I came here, I thought it was counterintuitive. I have both argued with my deputies and talked about double plowing of ground, and I have watched the experience, and I think the experience is our best teacher. I have gone back to look at the annual reports for the last 20 years. The system processing times and those charts run in 10-year cycles. And if you go back, look at a year, and check an increase in district committee referrals, and then check the processing times the year after, there is an almost perfect correlation in the wrong direction.
Well, you've got the staff doing initial work before it goes to the district committee, right? Regardless of whether it goes to the district committee or
yes,
not.
Yes, yes.
Then you've got an assignment out to the district committee. You've got a 90-day period. And just as Bradley talked about the 100-plus days, but now it'll be 90-plus. What's the usual time until it gets to an investigator and you don't have a substitution motion? That's when it starts the clock ticking, right?
That's when it will if the court adopts
okay.
the petition.
So how many days does that usually take?
It will take less than 20 days normally.
To get an investigator
assigned? Investigator assigned, and then the 14 days from the notice
okay.
for the...
So we're to 110. Give or take.
110.
All right. And they can get another 90 days, so that's 200 days.
I'm sorry, Chief. I've
they have a,
lost
90 that. Days plus 20 is 110. They're not ready, and they're not finished by 110 days, the 90 days. They can come to you and say they need more time.
Correct.
How much time are you going to give them?
I'll be quite frank with you, Chief, as much as they need.
Okay. So you're going to get up to 139 or 159 that Justice Bradley talked about. Okay. This is just a push. I mean, this is leverage to try and move them along. Okay. Now, when it comes back to your office, this district committee recommendation, your staff still has to do a lot of work on it.
It depends.
Right.
I mean, I handle many of these cases myself, and I took one the other day. It was superbly done, and I put a cover sheet on it that took me about, and I had to do some work on it. It took me about half an hour to do it. It's ready for the preliminary review committee.
But it may not be. You may have to do more
frequently
investigation.
It's not.
So there is some time of investigation that's saved by sending it to the district committee, which
yes.
is Justice Bradley's point.
Yes.
Okay. But your point may be that it might be faster just to do in your office if you have enough help. Because it's not going to take you think.
Yes, I'm trading quality for time is what I'm trading. And I want to do it in the cases where I need the quality and my staff doesn't have the expertise. If I want to save time, I get in my car and I go to Barron County and I talk to the people and I judge their credibility and I write my report. But if I want it done well... I may want somebody else to think about it besides me.
Um,
Are district committees involved in those instances where there's a temporary suspension?
Generally not, Justice Prosser. The court in 2000 made effective the temporary suspension procedure where we can have that for non-cooperation. Prior to that time, those cases, which in my review were roughly 10, 12 a year on average, would be referred to district committees mechanically, not based on any other criteria, because we thought that the local contact from the district committee would be helpful to induce cooperation. That's no longer necessary. There are some instances that you may have seen where we file our motion after it's been to committee and the cooperation ceases and the committee investigator is unable to secure cooperation, but that's one of the reasons why there's a significant reduction in the referrals.
The cooperation, though, the non-cooperation is going to happen in your office almost immediately.
We generally almost always know that right away. Mm-hmm.
But you ask for, you say, this is a grievance against you, what is your response, right? And you don't get a response, or you get a half response, and you ask
right.
for more information,
mm-hmm.
and at one stage, this is pre-assignment to district committee, you get non-response.
That's typically the case, yes.
Right. And that's the ones we see. We
yes.
have been seeing.
Right.
Okay, now the guy's very responsive, no problem with you. You assign it out to the district committee, and he now or she now clams up non-responsive.
Right.
What does the district committee do?
They report that to our office, and then
we
may file a motion.
Okay. I'm just trying to follow the
mm-hmm.
steps.
There have been several cases. I see Judge Black out there. There was one particular case that comes to mind of far northwestern Wisconsin, where there was a temporary suspension, and OLR was unable to reach the attorney and actually get a response of any kind, but it wasn't clear if this person was still there or what the problem was. And it so bugged me, I almost wanted to pick up the phone and try to call him myself. But I didn't do that. But my thought...
I'm relieved.
My thought was that at least someone from the district committee could have gone over to the guy's house and said, he ain't here, or something, because... yes, I voted for the temporary suspension, but I had no idea whatsoever why there was no response.
Your Honor, I do not recall a specific instance, but I would like to respond by saying that we frequently ask district committee members to help us in ways that are not referrals of cases, and they are routinely very, very helpful and supportive. In some situations like that, we have used contacts from somebody who knows them to help. But they're not reflected in any statistics that we have right now. Some that we are developing for the board's information, however.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Saleem. And we'll hear from President of the State Bar, Michelle Benke. And then we'll hear from Warren Wood, Chair of the Lawyer Regulations Study Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Justices. It's my distinct pleasure to be here before you again on behalf of the State Bar of Wisconsin. And we are here in support of the petition principally. But I would like to raise one issue the court has already touched on, but I'd like to actually talk about it in a slightly different context. As many of the justices may know, I've served a slightly different life before this one, wherein I was the chair of the Appointment Selection Committee. And during that process, when the OLR system was originally revamped, the one-third requirement or aspirational goal was first put in place. And the Appointment Selection Committee had as its goal the idea of increasing the makeup of public members on these district committees. And I know the court has also taken extensive opportunities to encourage people to apply for this, both lawyers and public members, but a great push has been made on public members. The one area that we expressed the concern is that if the rule clearly says that it has to be one-third, but then is aspirational as to the two-fifths, there could be that concept that the committee is not properly constituted. During my time as Appointment Selection Committee, one of the other issues that we faced was that the Appointment Selection Committee has as a goal putting forth at least two candidates for each open spot. So let me use Dane County as an example. If the Dane County Committee is made up of roughly 35 people, one-third would necessitate at least 12 public members. And then the Appointment Selection Committee, in trying to place those 12 members, would need to put forth 24 names, at least 24 names, before this court. And this court has been lenient may not be the right word, but what we have tried to do is acknowledge the lack of public applications, and so we tried in the past to put forth at least more than at least the exact number. So again, using the Dane County example, we might not have 24 names to put before you, but we might have had 16 or 12 so that you as a court had some number to select from. But even in allowing that leniency, we always did suffer from having public members. And I thought that Dane County as an area was fairly fortunate. When I looked back at my records for some of the outlying counties, we often only had one public member who had put a name in for perhaps two open slots. So while we speak in support of the petition, we do think that setting the one-third as an absolute does raise the question of whether the committee is properly constituted, and in light of the very real difficulties in getting public applicants, we would not want to undermine the validity of what the committee has done, and so we would ask for some language that would indicate that that is aspirational and that we have not violated the rule by not having a properly constituted committee. Yes?
Thank you. As I hear you, perhaps something of this nature is what you're requesting. If you kind of move the sentence around a bit, the next to last sentence of 2106, to the extent feasible, at least one-third and preferably two-fifths of the members shall be public members. Is that kind of what you're looking for?
Yeah.
That would be very helpful.
Right.
All right.
That's the only point that I would like to speak to, and Warren Wood, who is the chair of the Lawyer Regulation Study Committee, will also speak to some of the substance of the petition.
Thank you, Ms. Benke, not only for your assistance today, but for your work on the Appointment Selection Committee. I think that if you weren't the first, you were close to the early selection committee. You were the first and set us off at a great start. You'll be happy to know we are computerized now and that the court does, on all of its appearance, seek lawyers and non-lawyers when we're in Fond du Lac. We have forms ready, resume forms too, and I would ask the bar to communicate with all the local bar leaders and ask them to submit names for both lawyers and non-lawyers and ask their members to do that at their meetings. But we do have materials. We have a list of all the present task forces and committees with short descriptions of what they do. And as I said, Mary Lou Muntz, when she was on the committee, prepared a form that people could use who don't have resumes but fill them in. So we're slowly but surely progressing with a great start from you. Thanks. Mr. Wood.
Good morning, Chief Justice.
Can you top all of that?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
I appear as a former district committee member, a former district committee chair, and currently as chair of the OLR study committee. And the State Bar does support in those committees and the various hats I've worn allow me to personally support the petition 04-10. The changes, I think, are excellent. They continue the work that Mr. Saleen has done as director of OLR as far as standardizing the reports, making the process consistent throughout the state, yet recognizing the outstate practice as well as the urban practice differences within within the state, and allowing fairness to continue. The district committee process, I believe, is a fair process because the people who are appointed and who serve as volunteers, both public members and as lawyer members, passionately are concerned about keeping the bar high as far as the ethical practice of law in the state of Wisconsin. I recall the Chief Justice's comments several years ago at the Bar Convention in Lake Geneva about the concern for timeliness, consistency, and fairness. And while I'd be the first to admit that this is a work in progress and that we, through Mr. Saleen and his standardized efforts and through the district committee work throughout the state, we haven't achieved perfection by any means, I think that the district committees are a valuable part of the OLR process. We are getting better on consistency with the template reports that Mr. Saleen has created, his standardized training. We also have been addressing the issue of the timeliness, which Justice Bradley pointed out, is a bit of a misnomer as far as the 90 days, given the fact that it runs longer than that. But the rule change in the petition requires the district chair to now contact the director to request an extension if we're at the 90-day period. And I think that will avoid and prevent some of the slippage, if you will, that has occurred in the past. As a district chair, if I knew we were going to meet at 110 days, if I knew we were going to meet at some point, I didn't make that call. It wasn't required. If Keith and I spoke, we'd say, well, it's in the mill, it's going to hearing, we'll have a report out promptly. But I think this is a better system because it makes us all more accountable.
One of the concerns set forth in the letter also addressed the training issue, as the Chief previously noted. And the letter of April 12th from the State Bar indicates, we do not feel that the failure of a district committee member to comply with the training requirements should void or make subject to challenge any action taken by the district committee. Is there any particular language change with regard to 21.11 that you're offering, or do you want us to come up with language to address that concern?
Justice, no specific language is requested. I recall my years as a district chair. If the situation were to arise presently, I think what I would do is ask the responding lawyer and his counsel, if present, for a waiver on that issue if it occurred, rather than waste the time. Everyone's there, briefcase in hand, ready to have a district committee hearing. But I think that, aside from that, I think there is a need to have some language that this shall not create a procedural defense.
What if we just added the language on page 3 under 2111? Committee members are required to attend training within the first year of appointment as a condition of appointment, comma, unless excused by the director of OLR, unless the director of OLR extends the time.
That would be fine, Chief Justice.
For the training.
Because
that puts heat on the person to get it, see Khalid Saleen and not get an excuse. Sort of like being short judicial education credits and getting an extension,
yes,
about which I'm very sensitive at the moment. I'm short one. I just want everybody to know that. So I got to get an extension, and that really, it's on my mind. Doesn't mean I've done it yet, but it's on my mind.
Well, I think there's some on-the-job training that you've had as well, Chief Justice, that might allow you to get that extension.
Thank you.
We're all short.
We all don't have to make true confessions, okay?
Well, five of the seven of us.
Right.
That language would be fine, Chief Justice.
All right. Good.
Yes, sir.
Thanks. I prefer that. At least I think I do, that the people have to waive it, and et cetera, because we want people to get trained if they can. Mr. Wood, I want to thank you. You have matched my expectations, and I know that on the basis of your past experience in the Office of Rural Regulation and BAPR and prior life, that you've been part of it, and that you've been a very hard-working committee who's kept on top of this, and court appreciates it, and I'm sure OLR appreciates it, whether or not they agree with your committee.
Thank you, Chief Justice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Could I ask you, Mr. Wood, obviously you're committed to the work of the district committees. Do you have proposals or ideas on any other functions that the district committees could perform?
When I was a district committee chair, I was also a contact for WISLAP, and lawyers with disabilities related to alcohol and drugs is near and dear to my heart as a recovering alcoholic lawyer myself. And I found a bit of a conflict when I would get something referred to me as a OLR district chair when I knew that lawyer was struggling with alcohol and drugs, or the reverse, when a lawyer would, when WISLAP would contact me, Shell Gore would say, there's a lawyer in your area who you should visit, and I had a sitting grievance in my lap. Obviously, I couldn't wear both hats at once. I think the district committee should extend some educational function on an individualized basis. One thing I did when I was committee chair was to address, I'll give you just a brief example. There was a lawyer who seemingly had a series of grievances related to a breadth of practice that was overwhelming for that lawyer. And he was dabbling in things he shouldn't have dabbled in. And what we did was we went to lunch with him. This is after a committee hearing. Some time had elapsed. Just sat down, to myself and one other committee member, had lunch with him and said, what's with the practice? Why are you doing probate when you've never done a probate before? Why are you doing this? If these things get you in trouble, you might consider pursuing such a broad practice. He took the suggestion, and we haven't seen him since. So I think there's an educational function by the district committee members. Of course, we have to be careful about creating any conflict or appearance of conflict of interest. But I do think that that having the district committee set up in the rural areas, they know the lawyers. They know who's at the top of their practice, who's struggling, and why. And I think there's a good deal of work to be done in that regard as well.
Do district committees ever put on programs that qualify for CLE credit?
Yes, and not the district committee themselves, but Mr. Saleen has come north, I recall, in Eau Claire, I recall in Wausau, for the training, and it's been well attended. We had a function in St. Croix County where Wilmick participated, and I believe Mr. Saleen may or may, I'm not sure if he participated in that, but when we bring the training out to the hinterlands, the district committee members appear for their own credit purposes, and it really adds to the discussion, and some people have been presenters as well.
The court had hoped that the district committees would appear at local bar associations as well as the state bar educational functions and be able to educate the lawyers there about the kinds of things they see, the do's and don'ts, and I think that's what Justice Prasa was referring to.
It hasn't occurred formally, but it has occurred informally.
Well, good. And maybe when I think the district committee chairs meet with Keith Saleen's staff once a year, I think that's where I appeared and
yes,
talked.
Yes.
And I try and make that too, and maybe that should be one of the agenda items that you put on, that urge the district committee chairs and others to talk. And also, to the extent you can, I know this is a volunteer job, but to the extent you can, appear at the Knife and Fork clubs for the non-lawyers and tell them what to do, because they are very suspicious of this whole system.
Mm-hmm.
They think we're taking care of our own and that the public be darned. And one of the items that I always stress when this comes up is the lay, that is the public members. And that seems to be a great assurance that somebody is watching all of us.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Justice.
You thought you came here to unload, and you can't, you're leaving loaded again. Loaded in the sense of more work. But thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Justice.
If, are there any other appearances for or against 04-10, the petition for the amendment to support?